Finance Subcommittee for the Department of Administration. Today is January 31st at 3:05 in the afternoon. Members present are Representative Drummond, Representative Holmes, Representative Millet. I think we're going to have Representative Johnson join us shortly. I would like to, we're joined by Commissioner Becky Holtberg. If you would like to come forward and feel free to introduce any members of your department, bring anyone up with you. We're going to be doing an overview of the department today. I believe all the members, yep, have them here. Copies of the PowerPoint.
All right, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. This is an overview, so we're going to go through just a general overview of the department, an overview of our performance measures, some of our budget statistics, and then go through increments in the operating and capital budget. With me here today, I have our director of administrative services, Sherry Lowenstein, and she is sitting next to me so that when I use an acronym, she can kick me under the table, and which will remind me to speak English. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and get started here. So on this slide, you can see our organization chart. Red boxes are essentially department management. The boxes in blue are divisions or independent agencies that provide services to state government. And then the boxes in green are divisions or independent agencies that provide services directly to the public. We're a bit unique in state of Alaska departments because we do have our core function really is to provide services to the rest of state government, but it is important to recognize that we have a significant part of our department, a number of divisions who are charged with providing direct public services. Some quick facts about the department. We are one of the larger departments in state government by employee count. Not as large, obviously, as DOT and HESS, which are the two biggest. We have over 1,100 employees. Those employees are located throughout Alaska. The employees that work in the divisions whose primary purpose is to serve state agencies primarily work out of Anchorage and Juneau, for obvious reasons. But the Division of Motor Vehicles, the Public Defender Agency, and the Office of Public Advocacy have a statewide presence, and those offices are in 30 locations, or a combination of one or more of those are in 30 locations throughout the state. A few highlights of our strategic plan. We have an internal department strategic plan. I'm not going to go through all of those items today, but you have it in front of you. I'll note our mission. Our mission is to provide consistent and efficient support services for state agencies. That leaves out kind of the part of our department that provides services to the public, but it really is the core statutory purpose of the department. I'd also note our core services, which are not on this slide: enterprise support services, legal advocacy and regulatory services, and family support. Also want to note our department goals. We've established some internal goals to guide our management of the department. Those are service excellence, spending growth reduction, effective and efficient delivery of service, and employee development and support. So moving on to performance measures, I'm going to start this section with a caveat that we've developed some new performance measures. We've retained some, but also developed some new ones. That process was a bit of a challenge for us. Actually, the process of getting our performance measures to mesh within the system was a challenge, and so we have some refinement to do next year, and I think these will be in better shape next year. But as I walk through, I think you can see that we're really trying to focus on results and on results on choosing performance measures that we can actually manage to, that we can make a focus of our management, which I think is the intent, but it has not always, at least in I think they needed updating. We'll leave it at that. So the first one is legal advocacy and regulatory services. This metric, the efficiency and the effectiveness metric, essentially measure the same thing but from two different perspectives. It's the percent of DMV customers served within 20 minutes. As you can see, from 2011 to 2012, our performance in this actually declined. That is not a good thing, but it's important to understand the root cause of that performance decline. And it was a couple of factors. We had an increase in overall customers. Our volume of customers went up, and our personnel stayed the same. So we were dealing with more people, We also were dealing by an increase in registration renewal by mail, which requires pulling people to process those. It requires pulling people off the customer service counter to process those registration renewals. And we were transitioning to a new queuing system, which made the integrity of some of that data maybe in question. So I think next year will be a better year to really determine if we're making progress in that area. Also within legal advocacy and regulatory services, we have a couple of measures related to the public defender. The first is the cost per criminal case. And as you can see, we only have 1 year of data because these are new performance measures. So this is really establishing the baseline that we'll then use to we'll use next year to see if we're making progress. And then the percent of clients contacted within 72 hours. And I would note that that's fairly low. 28% of clients were contacted in 72 hours. That's a concern. We acknowledge the concern. It's one of the reasons it's important to include this metric in our performance measures. And the challenge there is really that attorneys often have to physically go down to the jail to meet with the client, and given schedules, work schedules and other things, that's difficult. So we really need to work and see if there are other better, more efficient ways we can make that contact without the attorney physically having to go down to the jail. Next is family support. We were dealing with primarily the Office of Public Advocacy under this metric. The first is the average personal services cost per child in need of aid and guardian ad litem case. Again, we have 1 year of data and or 2 years of data for this, so not really enough to make a trend, but at least you can see kind of directionally where we're headed. The second is for our effectiveness measure, and that's the percent of children met within 5 days. We think it's important in these situations where we're dealing with children who are either in abuse and neglect situations or involved in other kinds of cases in front of the court where their interests need to be represented, that those contacts happen within 5 days. Although we were at 62%, an additional 14% of children were met within the first 10 working days. So we'll be working on that metric as well. And we don't have, but at the point in time in which we had input this data, we did not have 2012 available. Moving on to enterprise support services, our efficiency measure is our 5-year cost growth trend. We're measuring a five-year time period. So we have 2012 really is fiscal year 2008 through 2012. Understanding that sometimes there's year-to-year variation, we believe that looking at a 5-year average of our growth was a more reliable measure. And so we'll be looking at this one again next year. Same with the next one, the percent of customers who were satisfied with our services. This is the overall satisfaction rate with our services. And you'll see this in more detail on a slide a little bit further in. We provide services to state agencies. We're the provider of that service, they're the customer. And even though we're the only provider and they can't really go shop around for other service providers, we think it's important that their experience with us is a good one and that we are monitoring and understanding that experience. So we've begun an annual survey process with the administrative services directors, who really are kind of our primary customers, to assess a variety of metrics. And that's, again, in more detail on a subsequent slide. Our department level results, this shows our expenditures over 5 years. And so you can see we have both the absolute expenditures and then the rate of growth. And so we think it's important because our cost trend is bending down a bit. We were growing at a higher rate in 2009 than we are today, and we've been growing at a lower rate every successive year. That's good. I think there are some things outside of our control this year that we'll walk through in our increments that may bump us up a little bit next year. But our focus really is on how do we develop a sustainable budget? How do we grow our services at a rate that is sustainable for the department, for our ratepayers, for the state agencies that are paying us through chargeback mechanisms and ultimately for the state? I think one important thing to note, and we'll touch on this a little bit later, is the personal services line for the state has averaged a 5.45% rate of growth since 2006. And so anytime you're growing at less than that, you're really either moving funds from one line item into personal services, or you are finding internal efficiencies. So this is our customer service survey results for internal services agencies. We measure Division of Finance, General Services, Division of Personnel, ETS, and Risk Management on courtesy and professionalism, timeliness, quality, and cost and value. And those are the results for for those agencies. For the Division of Administrative Services, we manage some internal customers to DOA because that's their customer base. So we'll be tracking this annually and hopefully be able to get a better idea of where our trouble spots are so that we can focus appropriately on those areas. Moving into our favorite slides, budget slides. This slide is a share of our general fund share of total agency operations, and you can see we're holding fairly steady at just about a little over 2% of general fund agency operations. For FY14, our big areas of unrestricted general funds are the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency. Although there are, we also have unrestricted general funds within Division of Finance, SATS.
What is that for them?
State of Alaska Telecommunications System and Alaska Land Mobile Radio. For FY14, the largest share of designated general funds was DMV, and AOGCC has, and several agencies have much smaller shares. Here you can see the breakdown of funds by line item. The two largest line items in our budget, as I'm sure is common with other departments, are services and personal services at 60% and 34% respectively. I don't manage other agencies' budgets, so I couldn't tell you for sure, but I would guess that we probably have a larger percentage of services within our budget. When you look at what is in that line item, there's a couple big things that stick out. The first is department's lease costs. That number is around $50 million. Risk management costs, which total about $40 million. DGS facilities costs, which total a little over 14, and then retirement and benefits costs, including the contract for a third-party administrator, which is a very significant contract, around $16 million, and various ETS services, which are a little over $26 million. So some of those unique services we provide are the source of that services line item, and why our services line item is fairly large in relation to our personal services line item. Salary adjustment increases and personal services costs. Most of the salary increase over time, as illustrated by the last bar on that chart, are due to contractual salary adjustments and health insurance increases, which are normally funded every year. The smaller blue section relates to merit increases and pay increments, which are structural parts of our salary schedule that are not typically, increases of which are not typically funded. They're absorbed by agencies. I would note that we moved in, I believe it was 2008, to a pay increment system, which changed our longevity steps. And that, so instead of having a longevity step every 5 years or so, now for long-term employees, it's every other year. And that is driving some significant costs.
When did that happen again? So that was
it was during the last administration. But I would have to, let me not give you the specific year and go back and verify that. So our next slide, our position count has been relatively flat, but this masks a couple of significant changes, and I've not netted these out, but I just really want to give you more a general idea of where we've seen big movements in position count, because overall position count is relatively flat. But some of the bigger changes, in total, we've added 84 positions between FY05 and FY14, but we've had positions coming and going. So we've added 79 positions in open PD, so that really accounts for the bulk of that 84. But then I'll kind of get into the other positions that have come in and gone out. We've gained 5 positions recently. I believe it was in the FY13 management plan, because we absorbed the hearing function that was within the administrative hearing function that was in the Department of Health and Social Services. We absorbed that hearing function into our central hearing panel. So that was 5 positions coming in. We transferred out 43 positions to departments in the FY13 management plan also, because through a partial decentralization of our HR function, which I'll talk about in a little more detail later. We've also added 15 permanent positions and 12 long-term non-perms for the IRIS project, which is our replacement of our core accounting and payroll system. So as you can see, there's movement in and out. The net of that overall has been adding adding about 84 positions, and the majority of that, I think, can be accounted for by the increase in overhead. So GF department appropriate, this chart shows GF department appropriations historically. I think we've kind of talked through some of these issues, so I won't belabor this chart, which I think you could spend a lot of time talking about. It's so detailed. And I think the most significant thing here is you can see that the bulk of our GF is in the legal and advocacy services category, and that is the area that is growing the most rapidly. So when considering all funds, general services is the largest appropriation, and that appropriation is significantly impacted by increases in lease costs. General services manages leasing, office space leasing for departments, and that's really subject to the market. We're going out in the private market, we're soliciting for space, and those costs are determined by the market. So it is a significant portion of that budget, and you can see that lease costs are just the general services is increasing over time, and lease costs are a significant part of that. The central admin services component here you can see has fluctuated at times because of the third-party administrator contract. And then one final note, it's kind of hard to see, but the turquoise line, it the risk management line, and you can see that my copy here is really, really small. In the 06, that 06 management plan, 06 to 07, 06 management plan to 07, it jumped up, and then those rates have pretty much flatlined. And that's been a historical way that risk management has been managed, where they have fairly stable rates, and then because they can dip into a fund called the catastrophe fund, and that fund is $5 million, and so as costs increase for property premiums, for workers' comp, risk management can dip into the catastrophe fund, and then at some point they exhaust their ability to dip into that. And we're at that point this year, and so you'll see a request for additional authorization for risk management because we have exhausted the CAT fund, and now we have to go back in and bump up our authorization.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for this. I understand the complexity. How is the catastrophe fund funded?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, it's through an annual appropriation.
Okay. So it's just it sits there until it's needed, and then when they dip into it, then it's refreshed, so to speak.
Through the chair,
periodically.
Representative Drummond, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Its intent is to pay for unanticipated events like disasters, but historically it's been used to supplement the risk management budget when that operating budget exceeds its authorization. And I can't explain to you why that's occurred, other than it's just been the historical way that risk management has been managed. I think part of it is that we charge our services back to departments as rates, and so you'll see in several areas of our department, we end up flatlining the rate because that provides consistency in budgeting for agencies. But at some point, you can no longer flatline that rate. And rather than having an incremental growth, you end up flatlining and then seeing a bump.
If I might.
So in other words, the state of Alaska is self-insured in this area. Because if you're funding risk management out of a catastrophe fund, that tells me that you don't have what is it called, insurance at the high end, you know, mm-hmm. after the basic insurance,
umbrella coverage or
not umbrella coverage. There's another word for it. I'm sorry.
Stop loss.
Thanks. Oh yeah, stop.
Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond. It depends, I think, on the type of insurance you're talking about. But for health insurance, we're self-insured. For property insurance, for some forms of property insurance, we're not self-insured. We purchase policies.
Right.
So, but without speaking to the specifics, because we have multiple types of insurance mm-hmm. that we're purchasing within risk management, I defer that to the director, or we can get a summary for you of the types of policies that we have and who they're with. But for property insurance, primarily, we are not self-insured.
Yeah, don't worry about doing that kind of research. That's entirely too much paper that I don't need, and that research you don't have to spend time doing.
And one other question in that group, you said that also deals with the workers' comp, and I know with the change of the rates in workers' comp, there's some concern that those rates are going to be much higher. Do you have, I think we talked a little bit about this the other day, are you getting the sense for where that might go?
Madam Chair, we just recently talked to our Director of Risk Management, Scott Jordan, about this. There is concern that the new fee schedule is going to increase costs significantly, and there's some anecdotal information in the private sector that may have happened. We were very concerned about that, but really we're not seeing that experience right now. And so I think it bears monitoring, because overall in our health plan we had good experience in FY12. So with respect to health care, we tend to see a pattern of where in our health plans where we'll see a couple years of moderate growth, and then we see a couple years of double-digit growth. So I think it's really too early to tell if this moderating of healthcare costs is a trend or if it's just 1 or 2 years of more moderate growth, but we need to watch it carefully. And I'm happy that we're not seeing the expected spike in workers' comp that we thought, but we need to watch it.
Thank you.
So within central admin, general fund appropriations are primarily allocated to the Division of Finance. We don't have a lot of general fund within the central admin component. I would note, though, that we are interagency receipt funded, and the source of interagency receipts very often is general fund. It's just general fund that we're charging the agency. So it's great to be able to say we don't have a lot of general fund, but the reality is we do. It's just not general fund appropriated directly to us. Also, another interesting note, the Division of Personnel General Fund spiked over the period of a couple of years. And again, going back to our rate-making function, that was a result of not wanting to increase agency rates and instead getting general fund appropriation. So there's just there's some philosophical choices and decisions you can that have to get made in that rate-making process. Do you want to give agencies GF and then give it back to them, and like give the division GF, and I think sometimes I think track record of doing both. Looking at this slide, you can see that other funds are our largest source of funding. We just touched on this briefly. Other funds include interagency receipts, Division of Retirement and Benefits funds, the Internal Services Fund at ETS, and the Public Building Fund. So we have lots of little funds and big funds that fall within that general category of other funds that, while they don't show up as GF, often the source of them is GF.
Okay, I'd just like to welcome Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Apologize for my tardiness.
Just happy to have you here.
Thank you.
So moving on, this is the same chart, but is a percentage rather than actual dollar amount. So I won't go through the narrative I just went through, but just to say again, 66% of our budget is other funds. So here we talk about growth, which is ironically enough one of my favorite conversations, because it's something that we get very involved in, that we're very concerned about. So this is general fund growth. You can see that our general fund growth has been 7.3% on an annual basis averaged. And the graph shows the continuation of that growth versus the management plan. And I think there are a couple takeaways from this slide. One, as we saw before on a previous slide, our a significant source of general funds, perhaps not the majority, but close to half of our general funds are OPA and PD. And they're growing at a rate much greater than the rest of the department. And so our general fund growth, therefore, is greater than, you're going to see on the next slide, the growth of the rest of the department. Our divisions that are rate making, that charge their services back to agencies, typically have a cost, an external pressure to keep costs down, because the other agencies don't like it when our costs go up because they have to pay for them. So we have not, we don't necessarily have that constraint on the general fund side of our budget. And I'd also note that the management plan typically does not include projected increases in personal services cost, and that's why you see the delta, one of the reasons at least, you see the delta between the management plan and our continuation of our rate of growth.
Representative Millett.
Thanks. Commissioner Holtberg, going back to OPA and the Public Defender's Office, are you seeing a spike in conflict cases where you're having to contract outside of those two agencies, or has that come back in-house a little bit more since, I mean, I know there was a lot of conflict cases that could be determined not to be conflict cases and that they could have worked through without going to outside counsel. Is that still happening, or has it changed?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, yes, we do. We have two initiatives going on in each of those agencies. The public defender has a project going to keep more conflict cases in-house, and they're continuing to work on that, and they are keeping more cases in-house. On the Office of Public Advocacy side, they've recently formed another unit in Anchorage to be able to, as you know, they have lots of conflict walls within their agency. So they handle they try to handle as many cases internally as they can because it's more cost effective to do that. So they're working on handling more conflict cases internally and not having to contract out as many. So on both sides, we are working to try to retain as many cases as we can, because we can typically handle them internally at a lower cost than if we contract them out.
Uh-huh. And so, as I recall, this is, I think, my fifth year on this budget, we mm-hmm. did a big appropriation for some computerized keeping documents firewalled between agencies and between attorneys. Sometimes is that done? Is that case management done?
Through the chair, Representative, I would like to go back and verify that when that appropriation occurred and specifically what it's for, and get you that information.
Okay.
So here you can see the same graph with all funds. It's a little more flat because our growth rate for all funds is less than for GF. This is 5.5% annual rate of growth, and ironically enough, our personal services costs grow at about 5.5% a year. So we're kind of basically growing at the rate of our personal services costs. And I'll go into and break down where that personal services growth comes from. But again, the 10-year plan does not include all anticipated personal services growth. Some of it's hard to forecast because it's negotiated. So therein lies the delta between those two lines. I'm just going to spend a little bit of time on services to the public before getting into primarily talking about our core service, which is services to other state agencies. So on this slide is just a list of the services we provide to the public, some of which require no explanation. Division of Motor Vehicles, obviously, it's an agency that touches virtually all adult Alaskans. Customer service is a significant and ongoing focus of the Division of Motor Vehicles. I think they've improved significantly over the last several years, but there's always room for improvement. I really love to get those Facebook comments from friends on how terrible their experience was at the Division of Motor Vehicles, or how wonderful it was. And I've gotten both.
Representative Drummond, were
Thank you,
one
Madam
of
Chair.
Those people?
No, actually, the I don't know if it's your main DMV branch, the one on Benson mm-hmm. near Spinard Road, is in my district, and I have friends walk there frequently because I live so close by, and they have almost always had really good positive experiences, as have I. I think they've done a pretty darn good job of managing customer service. I remember being pleased when I saw the number system take effect many, many years ago, and I think they really do a good job.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, thank you, and I'll pass those mm-hmm. kind comments along. And it's a challenging agency to manage, and they have some really interesting stories to tell if you ever go down there and talk to them about the things that have happened in those four walls. We have a new director of that agency, Amy Erickson. She's replacing Whitney Brewster, who moved on to become the executive director of the Texas DMV. So we are hopeful that the positive momentum that the agency has will continue, and expect that it will. Moving on to the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender, two linked agencies, but they have different missions. The The Office of Public Advocacy handles conflict cases from the public defender, as we just talked about. They also have the Guardian Ad Litem program mm-hmm. and the CASA program, which are resources for children involved in court cases, abuse and neglect, or other types of court cases where the interests of the child need to be represented. They also have a public guardian function where they are the public guardian of adults who cannot manage their affairs for themselves if there is no other guardian available in that with friends and family. So they provide a lot of really important important services for people who are at risk and in need.
I mean, the guardian ad litem, that's the one we were talking about earlier about children being contacted within 5 days or 10 days.
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Do we think we have enough people in that capacity? How is it if we're monitoring? I mean, obviously we only have 1 year of data so far on response rates, but what's your feeling?
Madam Chair, in these agencies, that's a hard question to answer because I think you could always do more with more resources. But I'm confident in the management of that agency. I think the director does a fantastic job of considering the needs of people first and ensuring that his agency is able to meet people's needs, but also being conscious of the budget growth that they've had and being aware of the need to deliver those services within their budget. So as I said, I think it's a bit of a mixed question. Do we have enough resources? Sure, yeah, we do. But is there always the opportunity to do more? Absolutely. Yeah.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's I am concerned though when was it 62% of children are contacted within 5 days. That's a good number to start with, but it concerns me that 4 out of 10 kids are not getting contacted within 5 days, and they could be in really serious situations that. I have real concerns that kids are it is not their fault that they're in a situation that is beyond their ability to control, and I think we have to do our utmost to, especially adults have more choices, children have none, I'd like to see that number improve, and I hope that the data gathering allows you to show that it will work.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I appreciate those comments, and I think it's important that we have transparency on those metrics, and that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons right. that you see them, and we'll continue to work to improve that.
It's good to know. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah. It's good to know where the issues are. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the work you're doing.
And I do second your comments. I think Quinlan Steiner's been doing an excellent job and really does have his head in the right place in terms of the agency, so it's good to have the metrics, and we can always keep working forward.
Moving on, Division of Retirement Benefits, it's on this slide, but we'll talk about it a little bit later, too. Really, they're an important agency internally and externally. Their primary clients or customers are retirees and political subdivisions. So they have a significant number of people externally who rely on them for services. And then the last four, I'm just going to read down the list. If we want to talk about them, we certainly can. But they're independent boards and commissions that reside within DOA for administrative purposes, but really the oversight is with the commission itself.
Representative Millett?
We could lessen one of your divisions here real easy with just one bill, Representative Johnson.
We could do it all with one bill, but why would we want to do that?
I think we're going to have several of these in front of us later in February.
That's
so
my
favorite
one.
I'll be sure to let you know what day that is.
At least DMV makes money.
Yes. And we're going to have Amy in too.
I guess APOC makes money too. So.
Yes,
they
do.
They do. Sorry.
Okay. After
so that
our
list
little.
Would be. <after that. laughs>
We could. Do you want us to number them or?
You can rank them.
The Alaska Public Offices Commission, Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, and then the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. And you will have an opportunity, I know, in this process to hear more in detail about those agencies.
Just for you.
Yes, we will.
So let's turn to services to state agencies. What I really want to do in the next few slides is just kind of go through our core services and really talk about the costs that those divisions manage, because that's really what they're doing, is they're managing costs for state government, and touch briefly on what's driving those costs and what we're doing to manage them. So this graphic illustrates the services that we provide. We employ people to perform tasks. And in doing that, we pay them wages, we provide them benefits, and those people are managing some sort of a business process, and we have a role in what that business process looks like as well. We support those people with technology. We buy things to help them do their jobs through general services and the procurement responsibility. We find and manage places for them to work, also through general services. And then we insure those their buildings against property damage and them against injury through risk management.
Representative Millett.
Thank you. Commissioner Holtberg, human resources, is that centralized still, or are each department doing their own human resources? At one time it was centralized in the Department of Admin, and it didn't seem to be a function that was working well for the departments and was pretty cost, ineffective.
Through the chair, Representative, we have partially decentralized. So in 2003, human resources functions, which previously until then had been located within the department with a very small central function, were centralized. And so recruitment, management services, classification, labor relations, all centralized. Now, from an absolute efficiency standpoint, probably was the most efficient model. However, I think there were some definite concerns from the departments about whether or not it was an effective model. Because many functions in HR are kind of high touch. It's helpful to know the agency. It's helpful to know their business. It's helpful to know the people, because you're helping to deal with problems with people. So we have returned some of the functions to departments, returned the management services, which is what you traditionally think of as the HR functions dealing with disciplinary matters, workforce planning, things like that. And we've returned recruitment to the departments. And really the issue there was, how can you recruit effectively for me if you don't understand my business? And I think it was a justified concern. We're monitoring this because we need to ensure consistency in the decisions that these staff are making in a decentralized way. But we have MOUs established with the departments and have set up processes to try to do that.
Follow up? And classification still falls within?
Through the chair, Representative Millett, yes. Classification is still centralized, labor relations is centralized, and payroll is centralized. So it was not a complete decentralization, because there are some functions that just, I think, for effectiveness and consistency purposes, have to be centralized.
Right. Thank you.
Hybrid.
So moving on to talk a little bit about personal services. This is a statewide view. Personal services, the personal services line from the expense side has increased by an average of 5.45% a year since 2006. Now, what are the components of personal services? Well, there are really four components. There's retirement, which doesn't increase because it's the 22%. The state pays for the cost of retirement above 22%, but not in the personal services line. It's a separate appropriation. So it's retirement. That's fixed. But there are three components of personal services that grow. One is the negotiated cost of living allowance that we bargain with the unions that we have in front of us every year. Also, the negotiated and statutory merit increase and pay increment. That's also bargained. It's just typically viewed as a structural pay plan, so it doesn't get changed very often. That's 3.5% a year for employees in A through F step. Above F step is 3.75% every other year. So that is often a larger portion of a personal services increase than the cost of living allowance. And then there's the increase in the employer paid health insurance premium, which is also included in the personal services line. So then on the right, you can see just the number of bargaining units we have, or the bargaining units we have, and the number of employees we have in those bargaining units.
I have a question, Madam Chair.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are all these state employees in this list on the right side of that slide, are they all in the same health care plan? Or are there a bunch of different plans that are specific to each of those bargaining units?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, if we could flip to the next slide, I'll answer that question. This talks about health care, the health insurance for state employees. On the right on the right are the plans that cover state employees. Mm-hmm. we have a self-insured plan that covers exempt and partially exempt employees, and it also covers employees in several bargaining units, our supervisors union, our correctional union, two of our marine unions, and then we have four health trusts, and we fund those health trusts every month with a contribution on behalf of the employees in those bargaining units, but we don't provide the health insurance, it's actually the health trust that provides it.
And are you familiar with how much difference there is between the cost per employee within each of those plans?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Drummond, we for three of our health trusts, we are negotiated in our bargaining unit contract. We have negotiated that we will pay an amount equivalent to the employee premium for our economy plan. So it is for three of the bargaining units, it is that premium is pegged to the economy plan. For the ASEA Health Trust, it is also pegged to the economy plan, but there was a multiplier in there that was negotiated several years ago that gives them a little bit more. And so we're actually paying more for their members than we would pay for them if they were in our own plan. About $2.5 million a year is what it equates to.
If I could continue. Has there ever been an attempt to get them all into the same plan in order to save costs?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, it's a very good question. That would have to be bargained. I would like to see them, and I've been transparent about this with them. I would like to see them back in our health plan. I think it would be more effective, and cost less. Obviously, when you have a health plan, the more members you have, the lower your costs are, because you can you can contract with bigger volume, and then your per member costs for things like plan administration are lower. So absolutely, I'd like them back in, but it's something that has to be bargained. And quite frankly, I don't think they're happy with the arrangement that they currently have.
It's also hard to coordinate the ends of terms and all of that other kind of thing. So I appreciate that. I wish there was something we could do in terms of causing that to happen, because I think everybody would benefit. I understand that there are different types of workplace situations that require different kinds of coverage. For example, firefighters. You don't have firefighters, I'm quite sure, in this, but coming out of the municipal system that I just came out of, firefighters and police officers have much higher insurance rates, so it would be difficult to level that out. But still, I think there could be ways to handle those various needs within the same plan, as you said, because of the efficiency of larger numbers. So, thank you.
I'm looking forward to the legislation.
I'll talk to you about that separately.
I'll be the first.
Craig, be happy to.
Back on page 24, you said negotiated merit increases. It's negotiated and statutory. Can you break that down a little bit? What is the negotiated aspect, and what do we as a legislature have control over in terms of step merit? Can you break that out for me?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the reason I indicated it was negotiated and statutory, and the legislature could decide to implement a pay schedule. I mean, it's the pay schedule is in statute, but it's primarily in statute for our exempt and partially exempt employees to align with what we've negotiated in the contracts.
So that's exempt and not, say, exempt and partially exempt?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that's correct. We have a very few exempt employees. Most of the exempt employees are primarily heads of agencies, the governor's office, and then independent agencies like ADA and some of the others have all exempt employees. And then positions like our deputy commissioners, our division directors, and others within the executive branch are classified as partially exempt.
So the 1,355 exempt and partially exempt employees.
Through the chair, that's correct. As of the date that this was proposed, and I can't tell you exactly when that was, but as you can imagine, it fluctuates a bit. Follow up?
And this kind of brings us back to negotiated. Are we happy with 5.4% growth?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm concerned about 5.45% growth, because I think we need to be growing somewhere closer to the rate of inflation if we're going to have a sustainable budget.
Yeah, and I want to clarify that. I meant to say, are you happy? Because I know that we, being me and some of my colleagues, are not happy with that rate of growth. And I just think it's unacceptable. Just this is the first shot, I think, that we're probably going to be hearing this. So.
Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, I think it's important in an environment where we're talking about costs and where there is significant scrutiny on operating costs that we are transparent in breaking down the source of those operating costs. And really that's in part what I want to do today is show you the different kinds of costs that we help manage on behalf of the state and where those costs are growing and what we can do about them.
Okay.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I can't help myself. What's the, like their automatic merit and step pay, what's the breakout merit versus step in terms of, can you tell me numbers, percentages, what percentage that increases one versus the other? Is that too deep, too quick?
Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, I can't tell you as an absolute dollar amount how much of our salary increase is related to merit versus step. I know we've pulled what's related to the two of them together, and I'm sure we could, if what you're looking for is to isolate the costs related to the merit versus the costs related to the pay increments, I'm sure we could come up with that data.
Yeah. And maybe a combination, and you know, of the 5.45%, how much is merit and step? Maybe that's a way to look at it. And it's not essential to break it out, so.
Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, we can get that
okay.
information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So moving on to benefits, retirement, as I said, the cost and the portion of retirement in the personal services line is the 22% that all PERS employers pay as a result of legislation several years ago. This chart shows you the benefits we're actually going to pay out in PERS and TERS. And as you can see, that curve is climbing. It's climbing because we're seeing more people retiring. The baby boomers are starting to retire. So we're on the bottom of this hill that we're going to climb in terms of paying those retirement benefits. We need to pay $140 billion in benefits payments over the next 70 years for our defined benefit system, which, as you know, has been closed since 2006. Our current PERS and TERS account balance is $16.8 billion, and the unfunded liability is approximately $11.9 billion.
Representative Johnson?
I missed the number. How much do we have to pay out?
Through the Chair, $140 billion in benefit payments over the next 70 years.
70.
You can see this chart goes all the way out because of survivors, all the way out to 2080.
Okay. Thank you.
So how are we going to make those payments? Well, part of it's payroll contributions we're making, part of it's investment return, and then PERS and TERS General Fund State Assistance that has come about as a result of Senate Bill 125. This chart just shows you the state assistance since that legislation passed. It's topping out at over $600 million this year. Under the level percent of pay methodology, that payment will grow gradually as payroll grows until it tops $1 billion in approximately the 2026-2027 timeframe. So moving on to business processes, we've talked about the costs that we manage in terms of wages and benefits for our people. We also, in our department, help to manage business processes through the accounting function and the payroll, accounting and payroll functions, and just as well among others. This slide talks about the IRIS project, and I'm going to use that acronym, but I'll explain what it is. It's the Integrated Resource Information System. This is our replacement of our core accounting and payroll systems, which are 20 and 25 years old, and really are almost obsolete. We have a very difficult time finding people who can work on these systems. Mm-hmm. So we received an appropriation several years ago to fund the replacement of those systems. It was decided at the time that we would replace those systems with an enterprise resource planning system that not only will provide accounting and payroll functionality, but will also provide an HR system and a procurement system for the first time. And I think that's really important because we're not just going to be replacing functionality we have, we're going to have new functionality that for the first time is going to give us statewide visibility on what we're buying. We don't have that right now. We couldn't run a report and tell you if we're buying a certain commodity multiple places across departments. But with this new system, we'll be able to do that, which should help us to identify if there are efficiencies within our procurement system and ways that we can leverage purchasing better. IRIS is an IT project, but it is really more importantly a business process project. As we're implementing this process, we have very systematic and structured ways that we're going through our business processes, like our accounting processes, like our procurement processes, to streamline those processes prior to implementing the system, because we believe that we can find some efficiencies in those processes through the implementation of the system. So turning to the cost of space, we manage office space within the Department of Administration, not all of the state's office space, but most of our large buildings. We also go out and procure leases for agencies when they need space and we can't find it within a state-owned facility. So this demonstrates the growth of our lease costs over time. Lease costs grow for two reasons. They grow because of the market. We're out in a competitive market soliciting for lease space, and they also grow because sometimes agencies want more space or need more space, and so our footprint grows. So those two factors are why these costs grow over time. And you know, this is a difficult expense item to manage because we can't control those costs once we're outbidding in the market. What we can do, and we are doing, is looking at how we can improve our utilization of space. And so we have implemented new universal space standards that we expect are going to save the state over $125 million over 20 years in reduced lease costs by shrinking our footprint, by using the space we have more efficiently. This is a conservative estimate because we believe that the systems furniture costs that we estimated in are going to come in much lower. So what does that mean? It means that we are moving to new office space designs for any new facilities, for any new leases, for any renovations, and ultimately we'll be looking at where it makes sense from a financial standpoint, existing floors and existing facilities. We estimate that if we implemented this in the Atwood building, we can free up four floors. By freeing up four floors, we can move in agencies that are paying much more expensive leases in the private sector. So this is the concern about this is people think we're going to cram more people into existing structures, and that's really not the case. You really have to visualize the space, and we're going to work on setting up some demonstration space over in general services so that we could actually take people through and show them that this new design is really light. We have very few private offices. Those we have are in the interior, so that light's not blocked. All employees have a right to light. It's designed with very nice break rooms. The walls come down, so you're not a rat in the maze anymore, and cubicle walls come down, so it's a very light, open space, and we believe it's going to be a productive space as well.
Representative Johnson, then Representative Drummond.
Thank you. You said you don't administer office. DOT, they administer some. Are they involved in this type of planning as well with other state buildings, or are you doing it, and are they coming along, or are they just not involved at all?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, this space standard is going to apply statewide. That's an administrative decision that was made. We don't manage all of DOT space. They have lots of public facilities that we don't manage, and along with some office buildings. But this is a standard that will apply statewide. But I want to be clear, too. We're not going to go in and renovate a building where it doesn't make financial sense to do it. This is about providing good space for employees to work in, and it's also about doing that in places where we have a positive return on that investment.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to say that darn private sector. How dare they increase costs? and then it's in Anchorage, it's sort of a double-edged sword because the city likes to see the state lease properties because they continue to collect property taxes on that, but on those buildings. But without owning your buildings, it doesn't make sense on the state side. So I can see it both ways, absolutely.
And through the chair, Representative Drummond, you know, you make a very good point, and this is going to happen very gradually over time. It's not going to be something that's done all at once. So we don't anticipate we'll be having any kind of significant disruption on the real estate market. And I think we're trying to be responsible in finding ways, given the current environment, and that we are going to be spending on savings this year, that we can help the state manage costs. And if we get into a situation where we have to choose people, programs, or space, I think I know what I choose. And we need to ensure that we're providing the most efficient space possible, but also very very well designed space that's comfortable for
employees. This has been modeled after several private sector initiatives, and one of the buildings that's implemented this concept is the BP building in Anchorage. And I think when you walk through the facility, you can. It's a very pleasant place to work, but it's also an efficient place.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a lot of that. Appreciate it.
We'll hold down the fort, right?
We're in good hands.
I heard you say you didn't need a quorum to
Not work. But thank you. Thank you for asking. Okay.
So moving on to purchasing, I won't spend a lot of time on this slide other than to say that we do, the state realizes significant savings through centralized group purchasing. We have a very small group of contracting officers that do enterprise-wide purchasing. I think we're going to be able to expand upon the savings that we find through enterprise purchasing when we have the IRIS project in place, we have more visibility in what we're buying. Purchasing procurement is very decentralized in the state right now. As I said, we do have a central unit, but most of the purchases happen at the department level. And without having visibility on what's being purchased, it's very hard to say whether or not that's an efficient or an inefficient model. Enterprise technology services priorities. So I'm going to run through five of these. Five of these priorities were developed by the administrative services directors. One is our own internal priority, bandwidth. We have significant ongoing issues with bandwidth, especially in rural Alaska. Mm-hmm. Bandwidth costs money. So the more there's a balance between enabling employees to have that, you know, the best experience possible with respect to the speeds that they're conducting business at, and having the money to invest to make that happen. Security is another area where departments have requested the assistance of ETS. We need to ensure in this environment where I think it was the New York Times had been hacked recently. You know, every other week in the news, there's an article about some large organization that's been under attack. So something we're conscious of. And we're working at an enterprise level to ensure that our data and our systems are safe. Mobile device strategy and support, just like the rest of the world, we're increasingly moving to mobile devices. We need to ensure that our IT structure keeps pace with that. Continuity of operations in the event of a disaster. We want to ensure that agencies and our core services can restart quickly and are adequately backed up in the event of a disaster. Identity management, people expect to do business with the state online, and they should, in today's world, be able to do business with the state online. So continuing to improve the look and the feel and the usefulness of the My Alaska portal is a priority. And then the last one is really our internal priority for ETS. As I talked about before, we set rates for other agencies, and with ETS, those rates have not been connected to experience always, to an agency's experience or utilization of a particular service. So we're working to ensure that our ETS rates are based on experience, are transparent, are easily understood, and agencies know what they're paying for and ultimately are happy with the service. We also this year went through an effort to back up our rate setting process. Many of our core rates were set after agencies had submitted their budgets, which doesn't make a lot of sense because those are costs that are partially driving their budgets. So we backed up our process this year to get our rates done before agencies submitted their budgets. We had a lot of success, but we have some fine-tuning and tweaking of that to do, but we're going to continue working toward getting our rates done early so that agencies have certainty as they approach their budgeting process. And then insurance and injury risk management, I won't go into this too much. This kind of just illustrates graphically the impact of the CAT fund. The catastrophe fund, and it shows how risk management's authorization stays pretty flat, but then they're dipping more and more each year into the CAT fund to pay for normal expenses. And we got to the point in FY12 where we're essentially exhausting the CAT fund. So you're going to see in our increment the need to increase risk management authorization because we're out of room in the CAT fund to pay once we've exceeded our authorization. I'm going to talk quickly on the next couple pages, or as much in depth as you want to, about our operating increments and capital increments. The first is the one that I'm
your
sure
favorite.
Everybody wanted to. Maybe I should have put it at the beginning of the presentation. Alaska Land Mobile Radio. Alaska Land Mobile Radio supports our core state of Alaska radio needs. It's an interoperable system. The agencies on ALMR for the state include public safety, DOT, DNR, and DMVA. This was a system that was built with a lot of federal participation, and there's been a lot of federal participation in operating the system. That federal participation has gone from declining to something much less than declining. There's just not much from an operating standpoint that the federal government says they can now provide to us. So they have divested 41 physical sites where ALMR equipment is contained to the state, and we are now paying for the operation, maintenance costs of the sites. They continue to maintain 8 sites, primarily the sites that are around the bases that they utilize. But they've said that it's no longer within their core mission to maintain the system at the level that they were before. So last year we were charged to come up with a cost share, and we've done that. The cost share.
For just a second, we had a question from.
Well, maybe this may be the cost.
Maybe where she's going.
Maybe where she's going. So maybe you'll answer before I.
Okay.
But I've got questions.
Absolutely. So there are two requests here. The first is to restore a one-time increment that we received last year, which was to help us to maintain the sites that were divested to the state. They were divested in pretty good condition.
Now you want to jump in?
I have a problem with a one-time increment you're going to restore. If it's one time, it's one time. If it's not, it's ongoing. So I'm not a big ALMR fan. So you understand.
Representative Johnson, I'll have to go back and check the legislative history. I don't believe we proposed it as a one-time increment. I believe it was proposed as a permanent budget increase, and it came out of our subcommittee as a one-time increment.
So you want another one-time increment?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, no, we're proposing that this be added into the base. We requested that it was added to our base last year. It was that request, while the funding was provided, it was provided as a one-time increment. It was not provided as an addition to the base. So we're asking that that be restored, put into our base.
But so it's not a one-time?
It'll be a million five. It is not a one-time. We never asked for it as a one-time.
Let's make sure I send the ones the same slide. It says one time up there, doesn't it?
Through the chair, it was our budget subcommittee last year decided we requested that $1.5 million be added permanently to our base.
Okay.
The subcommittee decided not to give us that, but instead to give us the same amount of money, but as a one-time increment. But there was no way that this was ever going to just be a one-time increment, and I would have been transparent about that last year, as I am being this year.
Okay. And I just, the one-time thing makes me nuts. I've seen more one-time increments reoccurring year after year after year.
Through the chair, we did not ask for it as one-time.
Sometimes it comes from the agencies, and sometimes it comes from us.
No, we're
just
good. I
understand where you're going.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
And I get this question, maybe you can answer it in your, have the cost of those radios come down?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, there are different radios available now. They are, my understanding, and we will follow up on this with you as well to give you a more in-depth picture, but that there are different radios available that are lower cost than there were when this program was initially started. Not to say that those radios are not are inexpensive pieces of equipment. They're not.
But we're not being held hostage by Motorola any longer.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
The second item on the list is also ALMR, and this is the where the cost share portion of it comes in. And if the subcommittee would like, we can give you a much more detailed breakdown of how we arrived at the cost share. We have spreadsheets galore that we can share with you. But essentially, we were also, through intent language last year, we were told to come up with the cost share. We've done that. That cost share, by necessity, would involve municipal participation. We've been between the proverbial rock and a hard place on this issue because the municipalities have told us they won't pay and have believed that for very good reasons, when the system was started, it was never expected that they would pay. So we have identified that of this $1.6 million that we're requesting, that $600,000 of that is GF that represents state agency portion of the maintenance costs. $500,000 of That would be interagency receipts, which would be collected from the Department of Commerce on behalf of the municipality. So that's the municipal on behalf payment. And then $500,000 is statutory designated program receipts, which represents the money that we're collecting from federal agencies. So we are still collecting some maintenance money from federal agencies.
I knew you were going to have a question on that one. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And understand, I'm a friend. I'm not a friend of Alamore. You say that 500 of this is coming from municipalities that refuse to pay because they don't think they need to pay? You started off.
We're between a rock and, as I said, we're between a rock and a hard place because we're told to collect and to develop a cost share, but we know that the municipalities, for some very legitimate reasons, don't believe they should pay and won't pay. So we're in a sense trying to fulfill through this creative mechanism the legislative intent.
Yes, sure.
So what are you going to do about the $500,000 shortfall? Because you're not getting it. I mean, and justifiably, I get it. I was there at the beginning. I understand, and I know it was promised, and I've seen everything happen. So the municipalities are justified. I don't have any doubt about that. So what are we going to do to make up the shortfall that you've been required to ask for that you're not going to get?
Through the chair, we're proposing that as interagency receipts that would be the general fund would go to the Department of Commerce and we'd collect it. Now, if the legislature,
I knew you were going to like it. We had a lot of fun going over this stuff in the co-chair's office too.
Yeah.
And as I through the chair, is this the cleanest way to do it? No. And if this budget subcommittee decided not to do it that way, then we would have no objection. We were up against legislative intent and the reality that we're facing, and also the need to maintain a system that supports our public safety function. So if there are cleaner ways to do this, better ways to do this, you are not going to find us arguing with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm done.
For the moment.
But I do want to say that one of the things we want to try for is for someone to come and be able to pick up the budget and understand where the money goes and where it comes from. And you know, truth in budgeting, we did away with all the smoke and mirrors a few years ago. And I'd like to kind of at least continue conceptually down the road of this one's funny. This is just laughable.
Representative Johnson, I don't disagree with you, but again, we're trying to comply and try to make a good faith effort to comply with legislative intent, knowing on the other hand that we need the money to maintain the system, but we can't collect the money.
Right.
And so again, we're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. I think if you asked us what's our opinion about the system, our opinion is that we had that the federal government helped us build this system. They promised a level of participation that, for reasons that we all understand, they're now not providing, but it continues to be a core system for the state, and at some point we just need to make a commitment that this is a core piece of infrastructure and just fund it, because the alternative is a significant capital investment in a new system that would do exactly the same thing.
And I'm sure I think we should probably do away with it, and not do away with the system, but do away with the Department of Commerce. If we're going to fund it, let's fund it and make that decision and go forward. I don't want to, you know, I just want to be as transparent as we can. And this is hokey. I don't care who you are. and that pesky legislature will do that to you sometimes, and I do understand it. But Madam Chair, maybe that's something we could address. And
I have a feeling it's something we will address.
Thank you. Thank God I'm glad I'm not on the Finance Committee.
It is amusingly convoluted.
Thank you.
But it's managed to amuse me on more than one occasion now. Yeah. So
we do not
disagree. I did actually suggest that maybe they just wanted to send this over to DPS and get it off their books, but then I figured then they wouldn't get to have this fun with us.
Homeland Security, I think it's a great question.
Okay, we'll move on to the next.
Hang on. The next item is just the core services increases that all agencies are getting, and that this is our portion of it to help pay for actually the increases in rates that we're experiencing and passing along. Next item is general services.
Yep, yeah. Representative Johnson.
Core service include contracts?
Through the chair, I think I'm
going to Representative Johnson. I think I'm going to defer that to Sherry for
some clarification on contracts.
The contracts we're under negotiating now.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, those costs are not included. The contracts we're negotiating now are not included in the budget.
So this is based upon if we were to flat fund the contracts, this would be the actual number?
This is for, through the chair, this is increases in core services, which are increases in things like the division of personnel cost, risk management costs, which we'll go through in a minute. Okay. These are the costs we
but
charge out to
services.
Agencies. Okay. No, these are just our costs that we charge out to agencies, and they pay. They get general funds
right.
when we have increases to help them offset those costs, and that this is our portion of that.
When you get to that portion of the ask, would you let me know?
The personal services part
yeah.
will be affected by the contracts?
Yes.
Through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
We will do that. The general services items are things that you see in this budget every year. These are very recurring costs, increases that are as a result of things like lease cost increases, maintenance costs that when you have maintenance contracts and they typically go up every year, not go down. The one item I do want to point out here, though, is typically our lease cost increases much larger than this. I think it was $3 million last year. And our lease cost didn't go up as much as we anticipated, and so we have excess authorization, which is why the number is lower this year. We have in this two new positions that we are requesting. There are two reasons for that. The first is to assist us in implementation of the space standards, which we see as a long-term cost-saving measure. And the other is related to some of the capital projects that we are managing that we would not typically have capital projects of that magnitude that we're managing. And we'll talk about that in the capital section. Operating increments are actually moving on to moving on to new programs and program expansion. The first item is risk management. We talked a little bit about this. Essentially, we flatlined the risk management authorization, dipped into the CAT fund to make up for that, and now we've exhausted the CAT fund. And so we're at a point where our regular operating budget is completely absorbing the CAT fund is a better way to put it. So this is increasing that authorization to help so we can collect additional money. The reason that the risk management costs are going up is twofold. Workers' comp costs, which we talked about, are paid for from risk management. The medical costs are going up significantly, not down, although we did have a better experience last year. The second source of that increase is our regular property premium increases. We've seen some pretty significant property insurance increases as a result of worldwide natural disasters like the Japan tsunami. Second item on this sheet is health plans administration. We currently have a request for proposals out for a new third-party administrator, pharmacy benefits manager, dental network, and wellness vendor. This is a placeholder for the potential increases in those costs. We don't know what those costs increase, if the costs will increase or what they will be until we're through that RFP process. So this is essentially a placeholder. And I'd note that those costs are paid for out of the group health and life benefits fund.
Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's 1.5 increase. What's the total cost?
The total cost of that contract is around $16 million a year.
16 or 60?
16.
16, okay. I'm having trouble with these numbers today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Next item is enterprise technology services. We've done a similar thing with ETS over the last several years, which is their rates have been relatively flat. And they need a bit of a bump to keep up with personal services cost. This is ISF funds. The second item is a decrement to eliminate some uncollectible federal receipt authority. Retirement and benefits, you saw that chart of the benefits we're paying. We're at the bottom of a steep hill. We are seeing significant increases in the number of people retiring every year. So the population that DRB is serving is increasing. So we have two initiatives to help us manage that increase in retirees. The first is that we have reorganized the division. We've gone through an extensive division reorganization, including looking at all our business processes to find efficiencies in those business processes. As an example, there was one business process they just went through an exercise to look at, and they've eliminated about half the time it takes to do that function. So we're trying to become more internally efficient, and then we're utilizing technology to help to add self-service functionality so that retirees and those approaching retirement can do more online, and so that our IT systems are up to date and capable of handling and helping us to be more efficient in handling this wave of retirees that we're seeing. So this is one, this is an operating element of that effort that relates to new systems that we are working with Oracle to put into place. And then the last item is AOGCC increased overtime for petroleum inspectors. I would note that AOGCC has lapsed funds in the last several years, just as a side note.
Question on that?
No.
Okay.
not for this meeting.
Okay. We'll be talking to them later.
Yeah. Other issues, we talked about the partial HR decentralization, so I won't go into that in any more detail. Legal and advocacy appropriation, we don't anticipate a supplemental. In the recent memory of the public defender, they've always had a supplemental. Can't verify if it's gone back, how far back in time they've had a supplemental, but virtually every year in recent memory. We don't anticipate one this year. It's not to say that we won't have an increment in the governor's amended for that agency, but we believe that from a philosophical standpoint, agencies need to manage within the authorization that they're given by the legislature. And so we're working very hard this year to make sure that happens. Bargaining unit negotiations, we're negotiating contracts right now with three bargaining units, the general government unit, the supervisory unit, and the Confidential Employees Association, which represents our HR staff primarily. And those contracts are due to the legislature March 15th. We have often not made that deadline. We are working diligently to meet that deadline this year because we understand the importance of those contracts and the potential costs that they could add to the budget, which are not in the budget yet because we don't know what those costs are going to be since we're still engaged in negotiations.
Yeah. How many employees does these represent? I was going to go back and add it up myself.
About 8,800, about 10,000. That's a rough estimate. The numbers are on the slide, and you can add them up at your leisure. But it's more than 10,000. It's about between 10,000 and 11,000. So there are our two biggest bargaining units are GGU and SU, our general government unit and our supervisors unit. Finally, almost at the end here, capital requests, Alaska Public Broadcasting. This is a fairly large request. It's $5.3 million. And essentially, if this relates to the digital conversion that the federal government has mandated, these stations have to be converted to digital by 2015 or they'll go dark. And so it's really a decision about whether or not we're going to continue to provide this service in rural Alaska. The Douglas Island Building is a project to rehabilitate the Douglas Island office building, which originally we had thought would have to be demolished. This is the second year of this project, and we anticipate if we receive this appropriation, we'll be able to begin that work. Also, under General Services, we have repairs to the Juneau State Office Building parking garage. Those garages are 35 and 40 years old and just suffering from some natural wear and tear. One of the garages has a building on top of it, so the structural integrity is of that garage is very important. The Nome State Office Building, this is $3.2 million. There have been some previous appropriations for this project. We are taking on the management of renovating this building. Again, it was a project where it was initially thought that the building would have to be demolished. It does not have to be demolished. We do not have to build a new building. We just need to renovate the building that we have. We are managing this project and the Douglas Island project, and then also the Geologic Materials Center replacement project. Those are fairly large construction projects, and the division does not have the capacity or have a project manager to do that, which is why we have one of those positions is to help us to manage some of these large projects.
And question on that one. So that's, you've got the Nome office building, some of these other large projects. So this would be adding somebody. Is this something in a position that you would see going away after a certain number of years, or do you anticipate other large projects would just come up and you would need this person on an ongoing basis?
Madam Chair, I believe that we will likely continue to do some projects like this. So at this point, it is not a request for a temporary position. It's a request for a permanent position.
No one ever goes away.
Well, that was kind of where I was heading. I was just checking to make sure that was actually what they were saying.
The next item is the Alaska Geologic Materials Center. It's a $15 million request. It says phase 2 of 4, but that's since we put the budget together, we've learned some additional information. We don't anticipate that there's going to be any need beyond this appropriation in the near term for that facility. It was originally conceived as a potential new facility that would be constructed. We found a building in Anchorage that we believe we could purchase if we have reached a purchase agreement with our owner, which we have not yet. But if we can purchase that building, then we don't have to construct a new building. Our costs are significantly lower, and we could potentially have them moved in by this fall. So much cheaper alternative than building a new building. But like I said, I'll throw in the caveat that we don't have a signed purchase agreement yet. ADA improvements, these are, so that's fairly self-explanatory. Capital asset management system, General Services has been interested in a capital asset management system for the buildings within the public building fund that we manage and the non-public building fund buildings that we also manage. This would be for all state public buildings. A capital asset management system essentially helps you manage by inputting all of the components of your capital asset, like a building, boilers, other systems, and helping you determine on what schedule they need to be replaced. So rather than waiting for something to break, you can be more proactive in your planning on how to accomplish maintenance and what maintenance is needed and what maintenance is most critical on those capital assets. Deferred maintenance is the next item. You see this every year. This is $7 million general fund plus $3 million from the public building fund. The next four items are part of the DRB efforts to upgrade their systems. Some of these are two of these are ongoing projects, and then two of them are newer projects, but they're all part of a larger IT strategy that is to promote efficiency now and to help them prepare for the coming wave of retirees so that they don't have to ask for a lot of positions to accommodate their existing customer service functions. And then the last item on this list is the ETS virtual tape systems replacement. The virtual tape system is part of the mainframe, and so this is a necessary replacement of a system that is essential to keeping the mainframe operating. And with that, I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
Got any more?
No, do I ever. But not for today.
But not for today.
We've only just begun. We don't want to do it all at once.
We don't want to do it all at once. What fun would that be?
Get
James, are we missing anything? Or are we good
out
for today?
If you have all your questions.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think then we may get to wrap up early today. I think our next meeting is a week from today on the 7th, and I've been told we are talking about more about retirement and benefits and health care. It's a big day. We also have more on the human resources decentralization, facilities leasing and space standards, and Alaska Land mobile radio. So with that, we will adjourn at 4:27. Thank you so much for being here.